Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to EWKLE! Please welcome a man who last night gave Michael Sheen a sticky handshake. It's Richard Herring! Hello, it's welcome to the show. It's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, except at the Machynlleth Comedy Festival, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapa Eat McCuff. Sounds good, Eat McCuff. I should do it here every time. It is lovely to be here. My last gig on Friday was at the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London in front of 750 people. Here I am in some shitty little chapel in mid Wales. But you know which gig I think I'm going to prefer the most? It's the one in London, where it's nearer, much nearer to my house. And was really good. Very nice so far. And I met Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen's in town. Have you seen him walking around? And Tony Blair's here and Brian Clough. And Wesley Snipes from 30 Rock, which is I'm most excited about. No. As my wife met him last week, and that's all she recognised him from was 30 Rock. But she didn't tell him, but I wish she had. I met him, and I got here like yesterday evening, and I was really tired. My son had been up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a long way to get here. And I'd been to bed, and I'd woken up, and I was confused. And then I met him at a bar, and I'd just eaten a hot dog, and it had gone all over my face and hands. And he wanted to shake my hand, and I shook his hand. So, you know, I had mustard and ketchup all over my hands, and now so does he. But that was my only... I was hoping to chat with him because I wanted to ask him to appear in a forthcoming film that I'm writing called Herring Blessed.
I was looking for him to play Richard Herring, which I'm not sure is a big enough role for him to take up in that particular. But I'm hoping also one day to interview him and then do a film of Herring Sheen in which he plays Herring. Maybe you could play both of them. I mean, no, he's probably quite got the range to do both himself and me. What do you think, Ben? I don't know. Anyway, so it was embarrassing to cover him in unguent. I think he liked it. That's his own. Are you in, Michael, tonight? No, okay. Thought he might come along. He loves the show. That's why here. He likes my dad made a porno. He's been in that podcast. Maybe I can get him in mine. I'd put some pornography in it. That's what he loves. Anyway, look, let's crack on because. I fucked up the beginning. I meant to say I was hanging around the Centre for Alternative Technology in Machynlleth. And they call it Rhelysbyr Eat McFuck. But never mind. I forgot. Never mind. I forgot. You know, I haven't done the podcast for a couple of weeks. You forget. I'll probably forget what the emergency questions are. Anyway, we've got two guests today. We've got to be very quick because we've only literally got an hour. So my first guest is probably best known as the woman in Time Holes. Come on. That is all we're going to talk about. I want to know about Time Holes. Sounds like my perfect film. It's Jessica Foster-Gue, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, thank you. A bit of ketchup on that handshake. There's a bit of ketchup. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good, thanks.
I thought for a minute we were just going to awkwardly stay standing.
We can do. You can do a stand-up version. That's what Brian Blessed did, to be fair. So I'm used to it. I'm happy to sit back here while you just do your show in front of me.
What Blessed does, I do.
What is Time Holes? Because it sounds like everything that I... It was a short film that you appeared in as the woman.
Yep. I've had lots of acting roles where... But it's a very popular part in things. The woman. Just been security, female guard in a film recently. Time Holes is a brilliant short by a guy called Ben Malaby, who is an awesome director.
I know Ben.
I'm going to have to try and remember it. The premise was that as part of your stag do, you could be, like, as a prank by the lads, stripped naked and thrown through a wormhole in time.
Okay.
So I played the woman who's just casually driving along a Crystal Palace road at night. And a naked man falls on the bonnet of my car. One of those short films that is essentially written to give some dweebs the chance to try the special effects of throwing a naked man on a bonnet in a car seemingly out of nowhere.
I was hoping the time holes would be on the woman, I have to say, but no, I had written a very different film in my head. Never mind. So, you started off with working with Sarah Pascoe on a tour bus. Is that right? Is that sort of where you started off?
It wasn't a tour bus. She did lots of tour bus stuff.
Yeah.
And we worked together in one tourist attraction, but I did different stuff in tourist attraction. She was very knowledgeable and clever, as you will know from all of her appearances on things like QI. So she did brainy stuff and actually learnt loads of kind of facts and half facts about London and went around doing tours. Whereas I worked in Madame Tussauds and other tourist attractions as a dead person, as a zombie. Like with loads of really gross prosthetics. There was like a 4-day audition process, like the X Factor. They took it really seriously. And then you had to like develop a character, like a psychotic character. You had to genuinely get really into it. It's horrible. This is a training that they do just to genuinely scare tourists. And then you leap out of the dark in various ways, quite acrobatically, and pop out of nowhere. You learn how to spring up from the floor very fast and stuff and go like to people out of nowhere. And you would only ever be allowed to do 3-month contracts because you're working in the dark so much and it's very horrible and you can go mad. But and they didn't want to get sued. It was the most fascinating job.
They work out it was 3 months that was the time, though. No one went mad in 2 months. Everyone was fine. It was 3 months. Stop them! Oh, my God, they think they're a real zombie.
Exactly. But you would get assaulted quite often doing it. Yeah. I worked in worse tourist attractions afterwards, where there was nothing, there was no recourse. Were you sort of hurt by anyone? Whereas in Seashores, in every room, there's like 5 buttons you can press that bring all the lights up, and all the security staff come flooding in. But yeah, I had a very tall German lady once start. I popped up and scared her, and she just, something switched and she lost it. She started doing this like crazy windmill thing with her arms and like slapping me over the top of the head and like ripping at my hair. So I sort of moved out of the way and put the lights on, and I said, "What's going on? You know, what are you doing?" She went, "Well, you scared me."
I've often thought about that, because like if there was a genuine zombie apocalypse, right, your immediate response, if you saw zombies, would be, oh, it's some student actors or it's some people having a prank. Yeah, come on. And then if they were real zombies, they'd eat you, wouldn't they? And you'd die. So you have to take every zombie situation seriously, just in case. You can't go, oh, well, you pranked me. No, I'm not. You didn't prank me. I knew you were probably a student, but just on the off chance, I had to destroy your brainstem there. To ensure it was fine. Fair so you point. Can't blame them.
No.
You can't blame them.
No,
for
you can't. I had a weird thing as well at the end of that. I think I did 2 sort of 3-month shifts, and at the end of the second one, the sort of head of entertainment woman took me into an office and said, "I just want to let you know that we've been talking. We think you're the scariest woman we've ever had." Oh, God, there's so many things that are wrong with that. I'll take it as a compliment.
And so did you do work with improv with Sarah?
Yeah.
Out of that, so you met Sarah.
Yeah,
and then
so actually I started off in a absolutely dog shit improv group called Mixed Nuts with a Z.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Delicious. The premise was, it was called Mixed Nuts because it was meant to be an ethnically interested, a diverse group of improvisers. But the man who had set it up, it was ethnically interesting. Unfortunately, none of the cast were. Absolutely none of the cast. Very white, straight, middle-aged, middle-class cast. It was bonkers. But in that group were some incredible people. And Cariad Lloyd was in it.
Right.
And so yeah, we were, and then we went off, and she'd been to uni with Pasco, so they were already super friends, and and we started our own improv group off the back of that and stuff like that, and then half of us started doing stand up, and then improv just got fucked.
Yeah. Well, improv's really hard. Those guys, I mean, there's some incredible improv groups.
Yeah.
Now. We've had Rachel Paris on the Paradigm. There are these things that, I mean, now Ostentatious is insanely.
It's so good.
So good.
They're so good. But it's a bit like, I mean, it's like a muscle. They're constantly exercising it, so they're really fit at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I think stand-up puts you in... On paper, it shouldn't be such a different mode, but it is a different mode.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think when you're emceeing, or if you've chosen to do a style of stand-up that's genuinely very improvised.
Yeah.
But, it's not a muscle that I kept flexing.
No. Well, I think you kind of need a little bit of impro in stand-up. But only when I've got a show really up and running, then you can start digging around with it.
Exactly, yeah.
But you've sort of got the script, basically, you then can veer away from it.
And you get that perfect like moment of comfort and exhilaration in what you're doing and in the audience and in that moment in the room where you can genuinely be very much like on the point in the moment. And that's the improviser. I think that's similar. I think that's the reason why, to lots of actors' annoyance, that stand-ups can get seen without having gone to drama school for interesting acting parts sometimes, because from the directors I've spoken to who have been foolish enough to cast me in anything, it's because I think stand-ups have that, often have that ability to be very much in the moment, even with something that's very much learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or scripted.
Yeah, and so you also did Nightmare Live. Was that around that time, or was that later?
That's way later. Way less of an excuse.
Nightmare? Who remembers Nightmare? Yeah, because everyone does.
Yeah.
It was good. So they did a live version of that, like in Edinburgh. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, so you would have a...
With adults being the kids, I presume, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So I was in the sort of the second wave of people in it.
Right.
But it's a creation of a guy called Paul Flannery, who's mega into Nightmare, and Tom Bell, who's very talented. And they're both super into it. And yeah, we had this big set and we'd move stuff around. You have someone out of the audience be, is it the Dungeoneer? I just was never dweeb enough to be. But basically, I got to play Pickle, who's this like dickhead elf thing in it. which was so fun. It's really fun to play like an arsehole who's, yeah, and a couple of different types of crone and goblin. Really living the dream, really using that law degree. But it was fun, you know. Yeah. Again, I suppose that was improvising. You never, yeah. There was no, you had to hit a few beats, but.
Maria Bamford was in a Star Trek touring show and she caught an STD off a Klingon, I think. Did anything like that happen to you during my life?
Gonorrhea off an orc. Yeah.
What happens on Nightmare Live stays on Nightmare Live. That's why I understand.
The only thing that sprung to mind that happened on the Nightmare Live tour was that we were so skint that most of our dinners on the road were in Wetherspoons pubs.
Right.
And once we went to a Wetherspoons on a Thursday, because obviously, Curry Thursdays. And it was such a laid back, give a shit Wetherspoons that our rice came out still in its blue plastic bags. And that's the glamour of that tour, really. That's the heady heights we were flying at.
And you were, you'd been doing a lot on Radio 4 Extra and yep. doing the comedy club, and mm-hmm. we were involved together in a fantastic show we listened to, the whole thing. It's like
well
a three-hour documentary about birth and
yeah.
an afterbirth, not quite. must have featured a little bit.
Yeah.
So how'd you get involved in that? That was it's a very good show. Is it still on iPlayer?
No, it's not. It was up there for a month and that's it, but hopefully it's not gone anywhere, so maybe.
So you talked to lots
of
comedians and used some archive footage, but not. And,
yeah.
And
basically, it's called Motherhood, Bump, Birth and Beyond. And I think so. Producer Laura Grimshaw, who's now sort of become a friend after all this sort of gross open conversations. they get two rounds a year where they get to do 3-hour specials. And we were like, well, what should we do one about? And at the pitching time, I was relatively new to being a mum. So I was like, let's go for it. But also, I felt like she said, we've got loads of archive stuff about birth and motherhood, but it was hilarious. And actually, I don't think there'd ever been anything honest on Radio 4 before.
Yeah.
Like, the footage they had was quite incredible. They had Brian Blessed.
Yeah.
In the middle of, I think, a front row or something like that, yeah. where everyone's talking, there was a male midwife on, which is what got him onto the subject. And then out of nowhere, he just starts saying that he delivered a woman's baby in Richmond Park,
yeah.
that a woman had just begun to heave a baby out in Richmond Park. And not only did he just birth the baby for her, but then he licked the blood off it and bit off the umbilical cord.
Yeah, I did ask him about this. He didn't mention the licking. I think the licking...
He decided,
I won't say that this time. But when you listen to that, that's the first time he's told the story, isn't it? Or the first time he's... Told.
Yeah.
First time he's
revealed the truth of that historical thing. Brian. But all the other footage that we had, all this archive footage, there was one who was a woman giving birth who just said, yep, okay, and I think I'll probably push now. It was so calm. None of it was... It was so unreal. So just desperate to talk to people. And who better than comedians to just be horribly, ridiculously honest about their manky, painful time. And so, there's some very real stories in there.
Yes, we did. Yeah, it was fun. Well, hopefully it'll be repeated and you can hear that again. Have you met Michael Sheen during your time in...
I met him last week, weirdly, at a gig, but not here at my time at McCuntlith. Okay. Yeah, but I shook his hand with a normal dry hand.
Did you? Yeah. Well, he'll remember
he
me.
He will.
Also, if he got hungry later in the day, he could just have licked my lid. He's got some nutrients.
If the apocalypse hits now, he's got probably 40 calories on that palm, thanks to you.
Does he seem nice when you met him? Did you have a chat with him?
He seemed absolutely charming and lovely.
They like him here in Wales, don't they?
He's one of them. Yeah, and he's done some kind of clever outdoor immersive theatre, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Something on a roundabout.
Yeah.
Well done, Michael.
Has he given up acting to fight for the rights of human beings or something like that?
He
cares about something for Welsh people or something.
He's trying to
get Welsh people
home.
Up to the living standards of everyone else in the UK.
Oh, your first boo.
Well, if you don't want the help, we won't give it to you. If you want to pretend. It's very lovely here. It is very lovely. I wouldn't bother with living standards if I lived here.
They're so,
so nice.
We're saying this in a part of the world that there's solar panels on the school roof.
Yeah.
This is, they don't need our
it's
help.
Ideal. It's ideal. But as lovely as the Macanthus Festival is, you got in a bit of a fight last night, yeah. I hear. You wasn't even dressed as a zombie.
No.
You didn't even have that
just
excuse.
My normal, awful, aggressive self. I stood near the bar with some friends and a man, big, solid wall of a skin-headed man turned around. And as if my friend Jen Brister wasn't there, repeatedly, I think, a noise, but it's definitely meant for someone else in the room. But it kept very loudly shouting it, turning around, shouting it, sort of right into Jen's ear as if she wasn't there. And she turned around and said, excuse me, that's very nice. He said, excuse me, do you mind? That's quite loud. And he said, fuck off. And I turned back around and Jen demurely tapped him on the shoulder and said, no, you fuck off. But then it turned really horrible and he went, no, you fuck off. And he looked like he was about to headbutt her or something. And he threw half a pint in her face and then threw the plastic glass in her face. And he turned back around. And we were all, four of us sort of stood there, you know, shaking, thinking, what do we do, what do we do? And all about to leave. And up until this point, I think it's quite a clear line of who's the baddie and who are the victims. And then I ruined it. You applaud now. But I could be dead. I tapped him on the shoulder and flicked what was left of my cocktail in his face and then put the upturned plastic glass on his large bald head. I just think my child might listen to this one day. This is not how to behave. Yeah. And then we walked away and we went to tell some police that were there what had happened. And within a minute, Jen then had to go and do a gig. And I watched the police bring the guy out. And then within less than a minute, they're all laughing together. And I feel angry about that. And I think, oh, what on earth was he saying to them? And is there nothing you could do? What if we hadn't been so assertive, etc.? And there was no recourse for any justice in this situation. Simultaneously thinking, but I can't go over and correct that justice because I did definitely assault him back.
But I think you're okay because when I was in my fight in Liverpool, when I was a month before I turned 40 with the university lecturer, he tried to. It was very similar in that he was attacking women, as very brave men do. That's my tactic in a bar fight because I feel at least I have a 60-40 chance of winning that one. And so he tried to hit this girl, and then he punched me in the face, and then I would never do this usually, but I did fight. I fought back or attempted to fight back before remembering I don't know how to fight. So I was very much the same as the German lady I saw doing the windmill. He luckily couldn't fight either. He was a university lecturer. And we...
A comedian versus lecturer. Yeah, well, this is a show
Liverpool.
That needs to be pitched.
It is.
The crappiest fights. If you think there's a lot of cuddling in real boxing... Wait till you see what happens when you pitch. That's a great idea. Making really unfit, creative people fight. Yes.
But when he did, he had me in a headlock and these bouncers pulled us apart, kind of reluctantly. They're kind of these two bouncers. We were outside a bar, and because we were outside, they didn't have to intervene. And afterward, they pulled us apart and said, we didn't have to do that because you weren't in the bar. But I think they were just embarrassed about how bad the fight was. I genuinely do. And the guy ran off, and then the Liverpool police arrived. My T-shirt had been ripped right off me. It was that. They said, do you want to press charges? Because the guy had hit me first. So even though I'd hit him, I did manage to get what connect once. And if you've never, and I'm assuming a lot of my audience have never punched someone. Just go out, someone punch each other in the head. Because I've honestly, for about 2 weeks, I felt like the Incredible Hulk. I felt amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Did you keep that ripped T-shirt on?
I kept it for the show because I did a big routine about this, so I had it in the show, and eventually I gave it away to someone as a prize. someone's got that. But anyway, so they said, yeah, that I could press, I didn't want to press charges, yeah.
No,
and I walked away. And there was a cab driver. It was a Liverpool cab driver on the rank. I got into this cab. He'd seen the whole thing. He said that was the funniest fight I've ever. So I think you would have got. I think you could argue that if he attacked. Well, though he attacked Jen, I suppose.
Yeah,
so.
He did nothing to me.
No,
I do. I get in trouble, you know, for wading in.
It's brave to do it, but also it's good. You know, he did. I think you righteously correct there in your.
I'm still thinking revenge. It through.
But also, I think you. But also, if you hadn't, if you'd gone to the police, they would still have done the same thing.
Yes, so exactly. At least yeah. So at least there was a moment. At least there was this little glimmer of humiliation for a horrible man.
Yeah. And you know, like if he did want to press charges against you, he'd have to say, "I'm a nice lady from England threw a drink in my face and put a cup on my head." His friends are probably not. His friends are probably not going to admire him very much.
That. I love the idea. You call me a nice lady.
And you're in Motherland.
Yeah,
which is a great series.
I mean, blinking, you'll miss me.
It's good.
I had a really. This is so. There's quite a few sort of in stand up. There's quite a few kind of creepy. Older blokes that are a bit obsessed with women that do stand-up, mainly on Twitter, and then some of them come to lots of gigs. And
does that sort of sound there from the audience was a bit frightening?
And there's one. I did it.
It's half like, she's caught me.
There's often very well-intentioned, kind people, but there's one, like, sometimes a little bit obsessive, and there's one who had come to a new material gig I was doing for Aisling B, brilliant Aisling, and she had... She doesn't reveal who's doing the gig because there's much more successful people than me on. So until just before, and she's very coded, and she put in a tweet, and there'll be a star, someone from Motherland on, amongst other things. Anyway, I ended up coming out of this gig with one of her, or women in comedy super fans, kind of saying, first of all, getting everyone there to sign things. Oh, and then, it's fine, but just... It's weird when people ask you to do that before you're very successful. And then I was on the underground and he popped up and was like, oh, same tube. And I was like, oh, God. And then he ended up living one stop on from me, tube, then train. So I ended up basically an hour with this guy. And all the way through, he was like, so all the other people on, I know this, I know that they do. I know this that they do, showing me websites. He's got things, pictures he's taken of them. He's like, but who are you? Also, what happened is she's tweeted, obviously someone's dropped out tonight because she's tweeted that someone on the bill tonight was in Motherland. And I ended up going, oh, well, I'm not in it much, but that was me. And he said, no, I've watched it and you weren't. Not a conversation you want to have with a semi-stalker of your more successful friends on a train at midnight going, I'm in episode 5. 3 scenes, although one of them's just kicking a football in a background. Come on, mate. Come on.
Stalk me. I don't want to stalk you.
Please,
stalk me.
Please, stalk me. You know where I live.
Right, I'll ask you some emergency questions from the original emergency questions book, available for sale outside this gig on the little table out in the courtyard. After, from the salesperson I bring with me who sells, it's me. I'll also be selling some. Get this quick because we're taking this off sale because we're doing a proper one through a proper publisher, not Go Faster Stripe shit. Proper publisher in the shop, so this won't be available for long. Buy this one because this is a Welsh publication. I'm going to do it properly in England. Now, let's see what we come up with. I did the accent at the beginning and everything. I'm one of you. Come on. all right. How about... no, I won't ask that one. just because it's a bit like what we were just talking about. the one I've just seen is, would you like to taste my special porridge? I've never asked any on that. But I won't. Let's not ask that. We'll go early. Let's see. We'll go.
Is that really in there as an emergency question?
Would you like to taste my special porridge? You can ask that to your friend. Would you?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm going to ask you some. Have you? This is a question I asked Brian Blessed, which I thought I would get an answer from, and I think he has with an affirmative answer to this question, but he went off on a tangent. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot? You're thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm really thinking about it. No.
No, okay.
It's just a picture of a penis and some pubes. Great.
That's what you get.
Is that one of the emergency questions? Have a look at that.
I think it's just...
Give me a response.
I mean, that is, in essence, 50% of the emergency questions, just in picture form. What would it take for you to fillet the actor Keith Allen?
A sort of post-apocalyptic dearth of any other human.
Really? Okay. You wouldn't want to waste the valuable semen Jeez. on a blowjob, though. If it was a post-apocalyptic situation, you would have to.
Yeah, you know, you've asked a question, and at no point have I considered that this might be a sort of enjoyable consensual act. Yeah, it's as a matter of survival.
Okay, fair enough. I'll ask you a nice one. That was a nice dub. Sorry, that was. If you had to go on a week's holiday with a spitting image puppet, if you had to, which spitting image puppet would you go on holiday with? Bear in mind the puppet would choose the holiday destination, and the puppeteer and voiceover artist would also come with you, but they would not communicate with you directly, only in character via the puppet.
This is awesome. Oh, God, how much of it can I remember? Oh, I can't...
You're too young for Spitting Image.
But I've got really clear memories, but only of John Major and Margaret Thatcher. Well, the grey John Major. Grey John Major, just... I'd just have him. I'd have him for a week, slowly eating that pea. He was always having a pea, wasn't he? Yeah, I like peas. And maybe if he likes peas, maybe he'd take me somewhere seaside eat, play the fish and chips.
Yeah.
And I think, were I to sit next to him... puppet form on a beach, that pallor, I look more tanned.
And the real John Major was a lot racier than the puppet John Major.
Sounds
so that,
like a bit of a
that,
sauce bag,
he
wasn't
was,
he?
That
yeah.
comes out. That might cut in a week.
Forget
that might
Keith
come out.
Allen.
I just think everyone I see is just inappropriate. It's almost like the whole book. I'll ask you this question. You might not have an answer because you may not know enough about. The franchise. If you had to stick a borrower up your ass, if you had to, which borrower would you stick up there? Do you remember the borrowers?
Yeah.
Do you remember their names?
No.
Okay.
The dad was Ian Holm.
Yeah.
So he can pop up there if
Ian,
he wants.
Ian Holm. Homily
sort of
clock,
led
I think.
Homily.
Homily, yeah. Homily, I think there was. Homily clock.
Homily Clark.
I used to read the Burroughs books. I pretended when I was a kid. I didn't really like reading, but I knew you're supposed to read, so I would get all these, you know, the whole series of book, and then pretend I'd read a bit of them, and then go, "Yeah, I've read that." I pretended I'd read the whole of Doctor Doolittle to my parents, and I quite liked Doctor Doolittle, but I'd read about two of them. there were about 100 of them, and I remember starting the Burroughs and having all the Burroughs Adrift, weren't there? The Burroughs up your ass, wouldn't it? Remember that one?
Borrowers go up the dark side.
They would. I mean, they would at some point, wouldn't they? You'd think there must be a borrower who thought, I'm going to give that a go. See what's. There might be something I can use up there. They were like wombles, but they were like human wombles.
They were thieves. They weren't borrowers. They were. I mean, it's awesome, but they were magpies. They didn't. I never saw them give anything back.
Did you read books when you were a kid? And did
you? You know
read
what?
The
I was crap. I was crap at reading for ages. I have a half sister. My mum's other daughter is so into reading, and you could just see the giddiness. My mum was so relieved to have finally had a kid that was into reading early. I got really into it. To my shame, reading when I was about 11 or 12, I got really into reading point horrors.
Okay.
It was like a bad. It's like, I suppose it's kind of slightly less embarrassing than romantic fiction.
Right.
But just very formulaic, terribly written, short horror stories for teenagers where the same thing happened in every single one.
Yeah.
And still to this day, like the only things in films and stuff, that whenever I watch psychological thrillers and that stuff, I don't find it that frightening. But I find anything where people are being chased around a building, shit my pants scary, right. Even if it's really badly made. And I blame the point horror series for that. Even I'd read them more than once and be just as scared the second time.
But I liked all the show. My dad was really disappointed when I spent book tokens on Peanuts books, you know, Charlie Brown. And I love those choose your own adventure books, stuff like that.
They were great.
Yeah, they're back.
Cool.
If they ever went away, they're back. Well, look, because we're short of time, I think we're going to have to swap over.
Yeah.
But it's been lovely.
Thanks for having me. It's been so fun.
Give a round of applause, Jessica Voskiw. Thank you. And my next guest, she is probably best known for playing a giant lobster in Harry Hill's Tea Time. It's Holly Byrne, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Welcome. Good to have. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. It wasn't a lobster. It was Kim Kardashian as a duck, actually.
How was it? Their IMDb has got it wrong.
Yeah, they did.
I think this one's going to be a fun one. I don't think it's going to be Brian Blessed level, but I think we're going to be on the way. What did Kim Kardashian as a duck do?
She had a wok on her bot.
Yeah.
I had lips out here. I had a bot out here. I had a wok on my bot, literally just hanging out here. And Gok Wan was trying to get his stock into my wok.
We were debating.
They did a series two. She weren't in it.
I was debating backstage whether you would be Holly Byrne at 12:15 in the afternoon, and it turns out you are. It's good. It's good to see.
Sorry about that.
It's very good. oh dear. So. you've done so many things, and what I like about you, when you look at your website, there's lots of quotes from all the most famous comedians in the world saying how much they love you and how insane you are.
Yeah.
So, are you really insane, or is it
it's a
terrible act?
No, it's just me.
It's just you.
And I don't attempt to do anything. It's just I'm sorry, it's just how it comes out.
That's good.
I've tried to come out differently, but honestly, it's better if it comes out like this.
Okay.
I've been around the block with the whole thing, and I'm not good when I'm turned down. I have to be at like 200%.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it don't work.
Okay. That's good. You did like in Edinburgh, where you stayed in character as the character you're playing in your Edinburgh show for the entire Fringe 24/7.
Yeah,
is that
did.
Right?
I don't know if you know, but the Edinburgh Festival can be challenging at the best of times. And really, what you shouldn't do is stay in character 24/7 for the whole month, because that really does send you all the way. Whoop, whoop. Basically, what happened was I did a TV show, an ITV show called Bad Bridesmaid.
Yes.
Where I was five days, five nights in character, and it was a hen do, and I was playing one of the hens, and the other hens were real, and the bride was real, and only the bride knew that I was fake, and she sort of passed me off as her cousin's, you know, whatever. And I was a terribly naughty little thing in the programme, and I nearly got punched.
I saw this. It was incredible. I mean, out of all, we watched the whole series because a lot of comedians were in it, but you like really pushed it to the point where.
Well, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
And the thing was, it was what's scary about it is I was doing this 5 days, five nights in character. Didn't speak as myself. Didn't hold myself as myself. Didn't think as myself. And I absolutely loved it. And it does say Mark Wooten does that sort of thing a lot. And he says that there is some sort of psychopathic thing in your head that if you like that sort of thing, which I do, you've got something really quite badly wrong with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get a big kick from that. So I thought, oh, great. Hiya. I'm just playing the room, guys. So I thought, it's brilliant for 5 days, five nights with a camera crew on you. Oh, it can't be that difficult for a month without a camera crew on you. Turns out the camera crew does help, because if it's just you on your own in a town where everybody else is going mad too, it just seems odd.
Yeah. Well, everyone is everyone's heightened anyway. Themselves,
and nobody, and your friends, pass over to the other side of the street, so they don't have to be with you or talk to you. I had most of my meals alone, staring at the wall. I had about four baths a day. But
did you stay in character when you were on your own?
If a tree falls, Richard.
When you were asleep, were you dreaming in character?
I can't say.
But that Bridesmaid show was extraordinary because I'd forgotten that I was watching some clips of it again. In my mind, I'd forgotten that one person knew the bride. It was important the bride knew it was
bride
a joke.
Knew, the bride had to go along with everything I said or did.
Because you were cutting like your
I cut
dress.
Up. So we wore the real bridesmaids dresses that they bought. These were the real things. And I took scissors to them because I found it too claustrophobic, and I cut it. And yeah, I nearly got scissors in my neck.
The other bridesmaids.
Yeah, had to be taken off at that point.
I
loved it!
It was a great series.
They didn't recommission it because ITV didn't want to have any more women on ITV anymore. No. Despite commissioning it in the first place because they wanted to find some female talent, but they thought, nah.
It was good, but there was lots
good of ratings, good Twitter responses, good everything. Nah, let's go back to some boys. Let's get some penises on. I haven't seen one of them in a while.
And have you bumped into Michael Sheen during the...
I bumped into Michael Sheen, or rather he bumped into me. because I was on stage at the Macarena in that showcase on the Friday night, and he arrived during my set.
Okay.
So he had an eye-opener of a time. And then I met him backstage, and he looked a bit... Whoa. Never seen anything like it.
I like him. He's a nice guy. I once tweeted him in the middle of the night when I think I tweeted "I love you" to Michael Sheen. Yes. Well, I was a bit drunk. Him and Brian Cox, the space guy, not the actor. I'm not insane. My dad really loves Brian Cox.
I'd go Brian Cox, the actor, over Brian Cox, the physics guy.
Well, my dad prefers Brian Cox, the physics guy, and so I told him my dad loves you. He didn't respond to that either. I thought he might. I think my dad might turn for Brian Cox. As an 81-year-old man who can barely walk anymore, I think he would still. He'd been very happily married to my mum for 60 years. I think if Brian Cox came in and said, you know, what would it take, kid TK Herring, to fillet Brian Cox? Not a lot. Not a lot is the answer. You're one of the, like, quite a few comedians have done this, but maybe you were the first one. You went to drama school, but then you went to clown school, which a lot of comedians seem to do now.
Yeah, a lot of them do. I did it a long time ago, and to meet the King Clown. To meet the King Clown, Philippe Gollier, and he says, he's Paris, and he says, "You are shit!" And then he says, "You are really boring me. You are breaking my balls." And then he says, you are idiot." And that is the highest praise you can possibly get. And I went off a happy woman. When I went there, I felt like I'd come home. I felt like I'd come home. I'd found my thing. I had done one Edinburgh, and then I thought, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And then I went to see him, and it was all good.
Yeah, because a lot of comedians have now followed that route, and it is, I suppose it's about finding your internal clown.
Before I'd been to drama school and been. I mean, I hadn't done any acting, obviously, because I went to drama school and they don't act. And then I decided my thing was being funny and not playing Juliet or Ophelia. So I thought I'd write. I hadn't done any gigs or anything like that. I didn't know there was a comedy scene. And I just did a one-woman show at the Pleasance in Edinburgh. Got to John Gordillo to direct me after having done literally no gigs. It was very odd. And it was quite a learning curve. And that year, my flat that I was staying in got... just before I was about to leave the flat to do my show, the fire brigade and the sheriff of Edinburgh came round, knocked on my door and said, you have to get out now, immediately. This flat has been condemned. And I said, can I get my stuff? I'm about to do a show. And they said no, and I had to leave, and I had to find a new home for the next 2 weeks. And we took them to court, and we won! Yay! Five of the people! So John Goodell directed me, and that was an amazing experience. And but then I needed to find a voice, and we're still all trying to find our voices. Yeah. So then I went to see Gollier.
Yeah. There's a sheriff of Edinburgh.
True.
Yeah.
True, Richard.
Yes. I did not know that.
And he's knocked on my door. It was literally like hammering a nail, like the cartoons.
Yeah.
Hammering a piece of paper into the front door. Yeah.
Wow. Blimey. That's the put anywhere.
I'm surprised you don't know.
I don't know. I'm the king of Edinburgh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know the lowly people beneath. There's a sheriff. I want to be the sheriff of Edinburgh. I'm going to genuinely apply for that job. And I love seeing you as Posh Spice in a corner shop. Has Posh Spice seen this?
Posh Spice retweeted it. So I did it. Vogue a few years ago do this. Well, they still do them. They call 73 questions, and they ask a celebrity lots of questions, and they're very formulaic and pretty incredible. And Posh Spice did one, and in her shop in Dover Street in London. And there's something. Have you seen the real one?
No.
You've got to see the real one to appreciate my one. But it's something bizarre about it. It's quite incredible. Anyway, and so me and my friend saw this and we thought it was quite funny. So I went along the Roman Road in London and bought a white coat, just the same as hers, but mine was £5. And I went into my little local corner shop, which sells about four different things. That's like he has nothing on his shelves, and we replicated the sketch, but we put silly answers in, and. Just on an iPhone, and then she retweeted it, and it went totally bonkers. And then I had a full page in the Daily Mail, full page spread, all over the... It was nuts, absolutely nuts.
Very good. And have you ever been to Hollyburn in West Vancouver?
No, this is what I want to do. I want to do Hollyburn in Hollyburn, and in Hollyburn there's lots of things in Hollyburn. Hollyburn is a mountain peak as well there, right. And it's a country club, and it's a race course, and it's all these things. So I want to do a thing where Hollyburn goes to Hollyburn, and I want to walk up Hollyburn in a big heels.
Right.
Yeah. So it's one of these things where, you know, you go, one of those things where they do these TV shows where people's mums, you know.
Yeah.
So it should be Alison Byrne and Holly Byrne do Holly Byrne.
There must be an Alison Byrne somewhere.
Yeah!
We could go to Holly Byrne and Alison Byrne go to Holly Byrne. Let's ask a university question. Let's see what comes up. What was the worst occasion in which you were totally naked?
Oh, I mean... too many to tell. I did this show in my flat in Edinburgh once, where I turned my flat into a venue, and I started it in my bed, and I did a dance in my bed. I wasn't naked, but because I was wearing a dress, I used to flash everything all the time. That's good. It got a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, but lots of people came to see it.
Lots of people.
Lots of people. That's Stuart said this about you, but you kind of have that air of that kind of old school 1980s.
Yes.
The alternative circuit about you, which has kind of disappeared a lot from the main circuit now.
Yeah.
It just...
Well, I think you see fear in people's eyes whenever I appear, and they think I cause chaos, which it's fair enough. Yeah. I like to surprise and things, and I just, I get bored easily, so I sort of like to throw in, you know.
Yeah. Were you influenced by that stuff, or have you just, because you're too young to have...
Not really. I mean, not really. I think I appreciate it now. I see it, and I know those people and stuff. But it's just sort of raw and there. I don't know. This is how it is. As I say, how it comes out. It's
good.
Chaotic and frightening for others around me, I suppose. No.
But it's interesting because that variety is sort of. I mean, there are elements of the circuit where that variety is welcome now and where it's building and people are doing sort of interesting, you know, out there comedy and stuff that isn't just a man with a microphone talking about his penis, I imagine. it's great that variety can... There's people still trying to make entertainment about variety. Have you ever been asked to do Britain's Got Talent or any of those shows? It seems like you're one of those shows one of those acts they would ask whether you would do it or not.
I wouldn't do it, no.
Have they asked you to do it?
No. I've never been asked to do that sort of thing. I'm too... Yeah, it would all go wrong.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a weird thing to do. Noel James, who I don't know if you know Noel.
Yeah, no, I saw that, yeah.
He's just gone on it. When I started doing stand-up in the early 90s, late 80s, was just the most... He was surreal but amazing, and you just think, that guy's going to take off. And then he sort of didn't take off, but it'd be interesting to see what effect it has for him, because he's done very well on it.
Yeah, it should be great. Yeah.
And you might do very well on it, but it's a question of whether you would want that level of attention as well.
Oh, I like attention. Is that not clear? I don't know enough about how my thing works and if it works in that sort of arena or whatever. I think I'm good when I have a proper context, and then I can, like in the Bad Bridesmaid thing, where there's a proper format and people understand the format and structure, and then I can just go crazy within that format and structure without both things being crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Or like the Victoria Beckham thing, where it's, you know, it's just a clear format.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the internet probably is a great, you know, thing for your kind of comedy as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
again,
it is.
In the '80s, that wasn't around.
No, it is.
Just to be able to do a 5-minute thing and explore something, and then.
And I think the internet and stuff makes, and TV does make it. It already gives you a context, you know. It already sort of narrows it a bit, rather than people, because sometimes I just don't have the starting point for me is kind of all over here, you know, and it's a bit, sometimes it's a bit too hard for people to get in, you know? So I always need a way in sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'll ask you another emergency question. Oh, this one's been, a lot of people have been doing this on Twitter and having fun. What film or story or play or whatever would you like to see remade by the Muppets that has not currently been done?
Dancer in the Dark with Bjork.
And who would be Bjork? Would Bjork be the only human?
Miss Piggy!
Okay.
Oops! Lars von Trier's greatest!
There's always one human, though. You could keep Bjork in it. And it could be puppets and Bjork.
Oh, let's get rid of Bjork!
I want to remake a Muppets Christmas Carol with the Muppets pastiching... The Muppets Christmas. I want a Muppets Christmas Carol, where Michael Caine is played by a Muppet, probably.
So who's the
Fozzie
human?
Or someone like that? There'd be a human coming in to play. Someone would be playing Gonzo as Charles Dickens. So they would be. One of the puppets would be pretending to be Gonzo.
Oh, the puppet would be playing Gonzo.
Yeah,
so puppet. Like Kermit would be playing Gonzo.
Maybe could be Kermit. I haven't cast it yet.
Okay,
I think. I think someone maybe suggested Beaker could be played by a human.
Apparently, you know, they were around. They were in London recently, the Muppets, and apparently the guy who does Kermit is like, it's like those people who are like, who work on children's television. They're always really moody and miserable.
Yeah.
He's really moody and miserable.
Oh, no. What a shit.
Sorry, what is it?
Yeah.
What's your book?
It's a Wookiee book. It's like the opposite of a...
Oh, Star Wars!
Star Wars. I don't like
no!
Star Wars.
Do you know, I signed... I went up for one of the main parts in that film.
Did you?
Yeah. But and I've never seen it. And it's quite a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which part was it going to be, do you know?
The big one in the last one.
Yeah.
The girl.
The girl.
You yeah. The girl part.
The Daisy Ridley part.
Yeah, that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck, I would love to
never
see that.
Seen
I'm
it.
Going to I am going to
earn I signed an NDA.
I'm going to earn enough money to pay to remake that whole film by the rights with you as yeah. Daisy Ridley.
Remake.
We might put some Muppets in. Well, there are basically some Muppets in Star Wars anyway.
I'd look like a Muppet in it, wouldn't I? Let's face it.
Oh, okay.
They went big with their casting.
They did.
Yeah.
Well, Adrian Edmondson's in that film, so there you go. So, yeah. Don't you know? He's the first person who speaks in that film. You seen that? You notice him? Some people didn't spot
Never
him.
Seen it.
Go and watch. Go and watch. It's all right.
Nah.
It's all right. You're like, kids, it's for kids, isn't it? Old films are for kids. Now it's all right. Maybe they always were. Who knows? What is the biggest animal whose life you have saved?
Oh, my gosh! Animals! I love animals! The biggest animal whose life I've saved. Probably like a cat, because... I don't like cats.
Yeah.
And so I suppose if I just, by my presence, by not being anywhere near a cat,
yeah.
I've saved their life because I could get nasty with it.
Right, okay. Well, in that, by that virtue, you've saved the life of the big blue whale as well, haven't you?
Yes!
You could say,
yes,
I have. I've not, by not
yes!
murdering it. You've saved the life of a Tyrannosaurus Rex by not killing it, by not travelling back in time.
That's me.
Through a time hole. Oh dear, what a world. I'm writing a new emerged questions book. I should have put some of the new, well, maybe I should have put some of the new emerged questions in. This is an interesting question. What is the worst music you've ever had to listen to or had on whilst making love with an
Oh, do you know
being?
What? I hate The Entertainer.
Yeah. That is a bad one to make love to.
It's because I saw an organ. I just
There's a piano there if you can play. It does say probably...
It
says the piano says absolutely no items to be placed on top of the piano. That's right, you can still play the piano, you just can't put anything on top of the piano. Absolutely no
Terribly
items
tempting.
It is tempting. I've got some items here. I would never have considered putting items on top of a piano if they didn't tell me I couldn't. Do they know comedians are coming here? It's like
a
it lacks like maybe an ITV reality show where they know we get a load of comedians together, put a sign saying don't put anything on this piano. The minute anything gets put, it's going to go, the legs are going to go, I bet. So, well, let's I've just got to try it. Let's see if I'm
what
right.
Why not?
Sorry about the microphone. I got caught up in my foot. We don't obey the rules here. Yeah! I shook Michael Sheen's hand without even washing my own hand. Yeah! Anarchy! Oh, my goodness. So, what have you done your show in Machalchath yet, or are you doing it?
Oh, I did it last night.
You told me. Yeah. Are you doing any more?
No!
Just the one. You're hanging
that's
around
it.
For shits and giggles.
Hanging around! I was wearing a white dress last night at a festival, as you do, in white boots, and I got I was in the mosh pit. And I got an espresso martini poured all the way down me.
Wow.
and a big red wine all down the back of me.
Oh God. There's a lot
so
of
I've lived, people, I've lived.
There were a lot of drinks flying around last night, so I'm amazed anyone managed to get drunk
yeah,
last
exactly.
night. There's just drinks on the floor. If Donald Trump could see the amount of drinks on the floor in the country, he'd be talking about that. Just go there. No one drinks. They just pour them on the floor. Oh, and you do character, a vlogger called Jane Pasty.
Pasty, yeah. It's a it's a sort of, you know, a right-wing bigot type character. And funnily enough, my agent sent it to somebody the other day, a telly guy, and the response was, oh, it's very traditional and not left field enough. And he said, I just didn't know what to say to that. That was...
Definitely,
I mean,
your
try your best. Honestly. Yeah, it's sort of Katie Hopkins type, you know, you see. So, yes, she just spouts nonsense. Then sometimes I think, oh, do I think that, actually?
Well, isn't that...
It's a fine line, isn't it?
Isn't that pretty much how Katie Hopkins started as a kind of...
It's worrying. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I mean, I'm pretty convinced she was joking to begin with, and then... I'm pretty convinced she was doing it as a, you know, as a pastiche thing to pastiche the left.
Yeah.
And now she actually believes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so is actually doing the things that she...
Yeah, maybe that's me, Maybe it's starting to happen to me.
I mean, it's one step away, isn't it? It's interesting. I mean, but that craziness thing is an interesting thing, because I think a lot about that sort of slightly split personality thing that you're talking about, that, you know, you've got like, because people choose to go into comedy, or they choose to go into politics, or they choose to go into murdering people.
It's
better that you do comedy, right?
I mean, it's not that bad, Richard. I think, I wouldn't say it's a split personality. I would say these people are all me, really.
Yeah.
My agent says it's me with a hat on. And they are all me. It's all kind of comes from this. Comedy's about being the most of you can be, isn't it? It's being, no matter if you're a character or whatever, it's about being the most, telling the truth in a way that is, you know... the most part of you, putting that out there, you know, and I feel like it is all me, essentially. It's just comes out in different
It's interesting
facets.
That, because Roseanne was talking about the first rule of comedy being you don't mock anyone more famous than you in the audience.
Yeah,
definitely not the first rule of comedy. Hey, it's not. That would be a weird thing, your first gig going, who's more famous than me in the audience? Oh, everyone. Right, I better not. But also, you know, comedy, I think if there is a rule of comedy, it might be to do with truth somewhere along the line. But then that truth is such a broad spectrum.
Yeah,
so what you're saying, you know, the truth of your performance, you know, people look at it and go, oh, that, you know, this craziness is truth. But
And I know when I'm not being truthful about it, you know, and I know when I'm doing something, I think that's not coming from a real place or whatever. Sounds very...
No, is it?
But, you know, it's...
Because it's... I think it's really... Because, like, you can get people who do, like, surreal stuff or crazy stuff, and it's... There's an artifice to it that makes it not funny. It's very difficult with, you know, that kind of surreal comedy or anything that's about that. Because, obviously, anyone can go, oh, you know, fish, blah, blah, blah. Anyone can do that, but then actually to be... It's one of the hardest bits of comedy, I think, to succeed at, because it's actually... You know, you find, you know, someone like the Mighty Boosh, let's say, talk about them, you know, that could fail very badly, but they get it exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true, they've worked out where they're going.
And I think it is, like, exactly, it's about the truth of it, and it's about it coming from, you know, and my things can come from really weird sources or whatever, but there's always a... It's always from something, or it's you know, I found it in some way, and you have to go back to that place that you found it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Stop talking! You have to stop talking now! I told Polly I was going to do that when the end of the podcast came. I should have done it while you were talking, but it would have seemed so rude. So we have to go, because another show's coming in. Ladies and gentlemen, Mads Randall Hollyburn! Thank you so much for coming. I love you, Wales. I love you. You have been listening to Rich Chang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Chang, and music's my pest. Everyone here would like to thank all the people here. That is themselves. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. And it's a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe, and Sky Potato production.
Small details are big surfaces. tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.